हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So then, we are at the beginning of the Brahmacharya Ashram, no? So, Brahmacharya Ashram, and the ordinances of studentship, topic 3, instruction. The teacher must instruct pupils in cleanliness, conduct, and sadhana. So it means after initiation, then they must be instructed in this. What is proper cleanliness? This both means the subtle and the gross, both the mental, your consciousness, the place, your clothes, all these different things. Then conduct, how to behave properly in various situations with different people. And sadhana, how to practice. So in rules of study, the student beginning study shall wear a clean dress and control his senses. At the beginning and end of a lesson, he must show respect to his teacher. Study shall begin and end under the teacher's direction. Sampat, beginning and ending the lesson with om. So it means the study must begin with transcendental sound, end with transcendental sound. So you see, Prabhupada always, there'd be some kirtan at the beginning, there would always be Hare Krishna or something at the end, like this. So then, what's in between, then will be understood and remembered. Otherwise, it doesn't work. By chanting in the beginning, then that makes one able to basically understand what's being said, and by chanting at the end, then you will be able to remember, be able to apply. So that's the principle of study. Like that. Also, as respect for the teacher, it starts and ends when he says. Otherwise, sometimes the students want to begin it and end when they want. He wants to start, but they want to play, or they want to finish now because they don't want to pay attention anymore. No, it has to be, as the teacher says, okay, we start now, and now we end. So it should run like that. The origin of Omkara. Who recites the Brahma Gayatri gains the merit of recitation of the Vedas. Dvijas neglecting the recitation of Gayatri will be blamed. Gayatri, the doorway to knowledge and transcendence. Omkar is the sound incarnation of the Lord. Japa, the best of all Vedic rites. Undoubtedly, a Brahmin reaches the highest goal by japa only. So it's said that one who knows the Gayatri then knows the whole Veda. Right? So if he does japa of that, so then for us, our main japa is the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So someone who knows that technically knows the whole Veda. So even if they're not very knowledgeable, so much in Shastra, still they're considered the most educated. Like that. But if someone doesn't chant japa, then even he knows so much, it's not considered so good. But if one knows and does, then that's also considered good. Does that make sense? So, especially in this age, so this is all ages, but especially in this age, then chanting is the most important. Yeah, Gayatri, the doorway to knowledge and transcendence. So it's by that it focuses, when we're chanting, then that focuses where the chanting goes. The Hare Krishna, then is a general principle, it takes you back to Godhead. And it'll focus you on Radha and Krishna. Like that. But the Gayatri then makes it specific, where you're going to go. So depending upon your Gayatris, then one goes to those places. Like that. Like we use Kama Gayatri, but other lines will use Lakshmi Gayatri. Others like this, so it's under Lakshmi. Wakama Gayatri means it's under Radharani. So these focus on this way. Also the Brahma Gayatri, we mentioned about Purusha. Purusha meaning the masculine identity. So then in this material world, then all living entities identify as male because they've all come here to be the controller and enjoyer. But due to the conditioned nature, then it separates it into the feminine nature to control and enjoy, the masculine nature to control and enjoy. So specifically, on the gross platform, it gets rid of the very masculine, the conditioned nature of masculinity. And at the same time, it also gets rid of the subtleness of masculinity, means that we don't see ourselves as servant of God. So then, a question came up last time, is then why would the women be chanting it? Just because they, went on strike, this, that. That doesn't mean that that's actual qualification for chanting, or that they should have it. Due to their ignorance, maybe they shouldn't be using it. But it can be used on two levels. One is if one isn't trained, the Western nature is generally the women will use masculine methods to get their work done of controlling, rather than use feminine methods of controlling. It means they'll use feminine, of course, but not necessarily always to advantage. So then they will tend to also try to use the masculine methods in moving in the world. Because in moving in the men's world, then naturally they'll try to use those techniques. So it can also remove that need in the heart, or that method in the heart. So it removes the gross masculinity, because it makes it very difficult to deal with the feminine nature if it's also covered again by masculinity. It doesn't match. It makes it the... Then on the subtle platform, it can be used to remove the masculinity of trying to be God, that we want to be the controller and enjoyer. So it can also be used that way. So technically speaking, then it's not so much as setting a precedent that Prabhupada's doing, but following the principle. But he's just applied it in this principle of how the culture is going, how it's being westernized, and what is the Western paradigm for how the women are behaving. So it's not that he's done something against Shastra. It's not he's done something new. All it is that his detail of application is still fulfilling the principle. Right? Because the way the women were behaving, it showed that there was an increase of, masculinity, meaning gross external masculinity, not the subtle. Subtle, of course, has to be there. So then it can help get rid of that. Same time, if one doesn't have that problem, like that, one is, trained in ways that are more traditional, still it can be used for the subtleties, getting rid of the subtle thing that I am God, like that. So it can be used on both levels. Subduing the senses, 3.2. A wise man should strive to restrain his organs, the 11 sense organs. 5 of them they call the organs of sense, and 5 of them the organs of action. Know the internal organ, the mind, as the 11th. By attachment to the senses, one incurs guilt, but kept under control, success. Means when one is attached to the senses, one will always find problem. You look at any problem that goes on anywhere in your own life and anyone else's life, if you really analyze it, you see it's due to attachment. It always goes back to attachment. Because if one is unattached, there are no problems. Right? Because what is of value here in the material world? Except for the Lord's holy name, the association of the devotees, the hearing of the Bhagavatam, the worshipping of the Lord, service that can render to the Dham. Otherwise, what else is there here? Right? But it's taken as something very important because of attachment. So therefore, when that attachment is there, there's always problem. Like Yudhishthira is sitting in the forest, he has no problem. Right? Draupadi has problem. Right? Because she's attached. He's not. So she complains to him that you've gambled, you've performed these activities, you're always virtuous. By your gambling you got us here. But you're virtuous, why did we end up here? You're performing religious duties, why are you here in the forest? Duryodhana is sinful, he's sitting on the throne. Therefore it must be the law of karma doesn't work, and it's only how you work. You work hard, you get good result, you don't work, you get nothing. Because it's obvious. You are virtuous, you're in the forest. He is sinful, he's sitting on the throne. So he worked to get you out of the throne, therefore he got it. You didn't work to protect it, therefore you're out in the forest. Right? So the first thing, first after mentioning that this is atheistic, then Yudhishthira said, I've never worked or done anything for a result. Whatever I've done has been because that's the duty. It is my obligation to act properly. That's why I do it. And that's why I don't have any problem. Because I'm not looking for a result from my virtue. You are. You're being virtuous because you expect you'll get a good result. Therefore, if you do it because you're supposed to, you also will be unaffected by the modes of nature. But if everything you do has to be for a result, then to that degree, you will always be disturbed. You'll always be in anxiety. Does that make sense? Like that. So we can see back to there that that's why then the senses must be controlled. Because if they're not, then the attachment increases in that. So it's for our own, right? We're following the senses because theoretically they're supposed to make us happy. But actually attachment to them makes us unhappy. And detachment from it, from them makes us happy. So if our goal is to become happy, then the Shastras say, become happy by being detached. Because then you actually are happy. But at the same time, we see is detached doesn't mean not doing anything. That's the other side. If we do activities because they'll get us result, then when we say, okay, be detached, it means what? We will do no activities. Right? Arjuna was attached to the activities, so he didn't want to fight because he saw the result was going to be bad. Right? And then when he's told, don't, why you are attached to this? He said, great, yeah, I'll go to the forest, do nothing. This is the standard mentality of the materialistic mentality. Standard materialistic mentality is, I work, I get results. I don't want the result, I'm not attached to the result, I don't work. That's why bhakti is so hard to understand. Because bhakti is, I don't want the result, but I work. And not only that, I'm working for someone else, right? I'm working for another person, and they'll get the result, right? And they'll get the result, they'll enjoy it, that's actually what's going to make me happy. So that takes faith. It takes faith that I'm going to work without result, and the result's going to go to someone else, and that's actually going to make me happy. So that's why this principle of humility, service, all these different things are what's trying, always, the Shastra always goes back to that, because that's our relationship with Krishna. Does that make sense? So we'll especially see these things brought out when they're discussing about the women, they're discussing about brahmacharis, they're discussing about shudras, like that, you'll especially see that these devotional principles are actually brought out. But they're brought out based on the particular nature of those groups of personalities due to their own material attachments. These are the methods they can get it. But the principle is they're attaching themselves to Purusha. Right? The brahmachari to the guru, the shudra to the master, the wife to the husband, or to the father, to the son. So we always have the aspect of attaching to the masculine principle. So in doing that, then there's a standard way it works. And that is what makes it work for devotees. So that's why if you know the law, then you know how to apply it. The detail is the secondary aspect. You understand the principle that's going on is how to relate to the master. Then it will be there. Okay, how to relate to the master in the way of knowledge, how to relate to the master in the way of service, how to relate to the way of the master in the senses, how to, like that. And so it'll have its particular details according to the situation. Does this make sense? That's why then, it means women can learn about devotional service through studying the life of a brahmachari. Brahmachari can learn by studying the life of women. They can both study by shudras. Shudras can study like this. It's because it's all the same. At the same time, is by studying any of those, you can learn service to Krishna. Because it's the same principle. Because he is ultimately, you know, the supreme Purusha, supreme enjoyer. Okay. Between sensual enjoyment and renunciation, renunciation is far better. A pursuit of true knowledge is even more effective than renunciation. Okay, so then means that better than sense enjoyment is detachment, but better than detachment is knowledge. Because you may be detached but not actually know what's going on. So if you have knowledge, then it already includes detachment. Right? Because you're detached because of some knowledge, but if you understand the bigger picture of why to be detached, that's even better, because then you actually get the proper result from it. Because then, if you have knowledge, then you can work in the realm of attachment with a detached mood. Right? That's what one is trying to get at. Performing one's natural inherent duties in a detached mood. So that's already then sannyas. Right? This is the opening of the 18th chapter of Gita. Is that renunciation means giving up the results of the work. It's my result, but I'm giving that for a higher cause. But sannyas means I don't do the work that gets the result. So there's two ways to do this. The mundane way of doing it means I don't do anything that produces work. Right? I don't deal anything with the senses or economics, you know, like this, or even general, you know, religious principles. I don't deal with any of that. I only deal with those things that deal with moksha. So all these others are given up. So therefore, since they're not doing anything on dharma, artha, or kama, there's no results. So that's sannyas, because it's situated in moksha. Does that make sense? So that's the standard one that we're used to looking at. But the subtle one, the devotional one, means that anybody who does their work, whatever it is, if they're doing it to please Krishna, that means the results are Krishna. So the giving up work that gives results is already given up, though you're doing work. Right? One means you give up work and you're doing nothing. The other means you're still doing the work, but you're doing it to please Krishna. Does that make sense? So therefore, even when is in the house doing the most ordinary duties that are supposed to be done, if they're done to please Krishna, that's sannyas. Right? That will liberate you and get you out of the material world, and by doing it to please, and by the aspect of trying to please Krishna, you know, then that will develop love for Krishna. So that's the actual Vedic system, the Daiva Varnashram. Then it doesn't matter where you're situated in it, because it's a social system, it's a game. Right? Does it matter which part you play in the drama? You know, is the drama going to come out any better? Right? It means we play whatever part we're suited for. Right? Whoever's supposed to be the hero, they do that the best. Whoever's supposed to be the, you know, the asura does that. Whoever's supposed to be, you know, the fighter, that you pick the one who can do that the best. Then it's a nice drama. Everyone just plays the part. Right? And even though everybody knows they're just playing a part, the people who do it are happy. And the people who watch are happy. So that's what the whole Daiva Varnashram does. It's just the modes of nature are doing this anyway. So you be conscious of it. Just take the part. Do it, but don't do it for the result of it. Right? It means you don't take it seriously that, you know, that the ladies are stirring their brew there and something's going to come out of it. Right? You know what I'm saying? No one thinks that when he stabs the curtain in the wall that actually somebody gets killed. Right? And we all, you know, and it's not that, you know, the guy on the stage really has a problem getting, you know, some stains out of his hands. Right? But it's the part, so it's all, everybody enjoys it. So sometimes you'll have devotees, oh, that's phony if I don't, but that's phony, yes. But to think that it's real, that's stupid. Right? You could say, oh, the drama is all phony, it's all bogus, these guys are just, you know, playing parts, it's just a drama. Yeah, so that's right, it is just a drama. You know, that's why it's called a theater and all that, just that this theater is a little bigger, right? You know, I think there was someone who mentioned that, about the size of the theater being the size of the world. Right? Like that. So, that's the principle. But the Vedas take it that it's the whole universe is the stage. Right? And the modes of nature are pulling the strings. So everyone's just marionettes. Now, the thing is you can take it seriously, this whole marionette play, and think you're really going to get something. You know? But do the wooden dolls enjoy? No, the people pulling the strings and the people watching enjoy. The puppets don't get much out of it. So if one understands that, and then just plays the part, whatever's natural, then one is happy, everyone else is happy, and you liberate yourself and you go back to Godhead. That's the beauty of the system. So it's not, it doesn't really matter what's the position or this or that. That's foolish. You know? Women get to do this, why can't we do it? The men get to do that, why can't we do? You know, oh, they're, you know, I remember one Mataji, you know, husband took sannyas, now everybody notices him and nobody notices me, and you're going on and on and on about it. I said, what does it matter? What do you care? You know? So like that. So it's a whole thing, there's a whole prestige out of this. But the whole thing is we have to be a fool to think that there's something to gain there in prestige. It doesn't mean anything anyway, because the prestige is there today, gone tomorrow. It happens that quick. Somebody being on the top of the charts today, tomorrow someone else comes up, nobody even thinks of them. You're not in the news for a couple of days, someone else is, nobody even remembers it exists. It's that transient. And this was someone who the whole world is out talking about and buying their records, is that next day, who cares? It's that transient. So let alone on a smaller level, you know. So that's this is the fun. So you have to be foolish to take it seriously. It means doing service for Krishna, pleasing Krishna, trying to do our best to please Krishna. That we take seriously. But the results of it, that we know are for Krishna. So if they're good or bad, that doesn't matter. Does that make some sense? It's important to catch that. Then this laws make some sense. Otherwise, they don't seem to make sense. It would be like trying to read a drama and why it's like this. You know, why does Horatio have to do this? And, you know, all these different things. And, you know, couldn't, you know, Pygmalion be a little bit more together than that? And, you know, you drive yourself nuts. The point is it's written like that. You like it, read it. Don't like it, don't read it. You know, is there a law? You got to read it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. It's just, this is the way it is. It's already been written. The drama's already been written. And it's just going on and on. It's the longest, you know, I mean, anything going on in Broadway, you know, it's like, what, 11 years? I think Oh Calcutta went, or some of these others, you know, they get on like that. This one's been going on for billions of years, you know, and still people are happy and going and watching, you know, taking part. You know, so it's the longest... Yeah, the longest run yet, right? And the most fun thing is you don't even have to advertise, right? Okay. He may be considered sense-controlled who neither rejoices nor repines. Means you get something good, it's nice. It means the result was good, so the endeavor we did nicely and it's coming like that. And because we're following with the natural principles, it works. Like that. And if we don't, then, you know, if we didn't, then we, and if it doesn't go nicely, then we try again. You know, because it's not, we're not at stake. We're doing our best. But always in this, you see that there's the opposite, is that we're doing our best. It's not that it doesn't matter. That's the mode of passion. We'll see that in the 12th chapter. The end. The 12th chapter, mode of passion is very happy to start a new endeavor. And if it doesn't work, doesn't matter. But it's not because of detachment. It's because I was doing it for result. I can't get the result, so it doesn't matter. Right? A mode of goodness, we're doing it because it's supposed to be done. It didn't work out. Then we feel bad that we're not able to. We didn't try hard enough. We didn't make our endeavor. We didn't use our intelligence. So there's a slight difference here. But this means doesn't repine or rejoice on the results. You may feel I could have tried harder than that, but even then, still, we just, wherever it is now, move on. Because if we lament, that means it goes into the past, it becomes ignorance. Or I should have done this, that's all ignorance. So therefore, we just move on. Okay, it didn't work, so then make a new plan, start again. Like that. So it's a very, very balanced position, like that. You know, very, not what we're used to. That's why it has to be, you know, studied again and again and again and seen in different situations how to apply it, because it's very, it's a very subtle point. Even though it's very practical, very obvious, But we're just so not used to it from so many years in the material world. When one among the sense organs slips out of control, a man's wisdom slips away. Right? Yeah, it means that as soon as the sense organ goes, the intelligence goes. Like that. Because the intelligence means it'll just follow that. Because the senses and the intelligence are connected. Senses only work because of intelligence. Right? It means you have to be able to separate what the mind gets out of the senses and what the intelligence does with the senses. Does that make some sense? Right? The intelligence is what discerns that it's a sense object and what quality it is. Right? You put something down in front of you, the intelligence discerns that this is this kind of foodstuff and it is of this quality. The mind decides whether that's good or appropriate or not, good or not. Does that make sense? Otherwise, how do you tell the difference? How do you know that this mattress is not something edible? Right? Because the intelligence discerns it. It's connected with the senses. And so it knows that this is something. You sit on this, you don't eat it. It's something else, you eat that, you don't sit on it. You know? So, like that. But the mind decides, is this what I want or don't want? This will make me happy or not. So the mind's attaining something that it values, then it's called happiness. And losing something it values is called unhappiness. So the two things work together like that. So that's why when the intelligence goes, when the senses go, because it goes with the sense. The sense goes onto a sense object, the intelligence goes with it, because it has to discern what's going on. That's why if the intelligence stays in control, then the sense doesn't go. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's where it goes. Because sometimes you'll hear the senses are, that you'll see, some places will say the intelligence is the lord of the senses, and some places say the mind is. The intelligence is because they work by the intelligence. And if the intelligence is smart, that means then it'll strongly say this is what should be done. So if the mind values intelligence, then it will keep it on that level. But if the mind doesn't, then it will, as soon as the intelligence discerns some sense gratification, the mind will say yes and take the senses there. So the intelligence has to follow. So that's who's in control, the intelligence or the senses. And that depends also on identity. You identify, I'm a devotee, then you don't let the senses go. Right? They're controlled. You don't identify that way, then the senses, I'm a sense enjoyer, then that means then they go. Does that make sense? How the mind, intelligence, and ego work like that. Keeping all the organs and the mind in subjection, he may gain all his aims. So when they're controlled, then whatever you want, you can get. It said someone of controlled senses can get anything. Someone uncontrolled can't get anything. You'll find those who are functioning more in the material world, getting more, actually the senses are more controlled. Because they have to work very hard to get it. You know, they'll do their 16-hour days and they'll, you know, sacrifice a lot. So they're controlling their senses. Therefore, what they get from it is much more. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the gain. Generally, it's projected by enjoying your senses, you'll get more. But that's just propaganda. Why would it be propaganda? Because the people making the propaganda, if your senses aren't controlled, they gain. You understand? You don't control your senses, you get your money, you immediately go out and buy everything that you want. So now where's your money? It's in their pocket, not in yours. And then because they've said, oh, you'll really enjoy if you have all that, then having attained it, the mind is happy for those moments. But then the next day it's not. But because one got some happiness, one thinks it was successful. And then the mind goes, what is the next things I want? So when the next check comes, then we go out and buy all those. But actually what's going on is somebody else who you're buying it, they're making the big money. Right? That's the... We see that? So if the mind is satisfied, we don't need any of those things, and then you have money. then you can buy something of value that'll last.
So if your mind is satisfied, then your intelligence will. How does that connect with intelligence?
Because the intelligence is going to work in areas that the mind is interested in. Like if the
mind is satisfied, then the intelligence is also satisfied.
Well, the intelligence then works in fields that are uplifting rather than degrading. So if the mind, if the intelligence and all that is working in areas that are not very refined or very developed, you know, for spiritual life, that means the mind still values them. So if you find that there's lower taste, lower endeavor, that means the mind still values that. So then one has to analyze that. Why? In other words, use the intelligence to put the mind on the spot. Right? Because the soul is higher than all of them. So the soul can do that. But on its own, the mind will just run on its own. It won't care. It'll just, the modes of nature take you through wherever it goes. But the soul can use the intelligence to say, hey, you know, why? You know, then it starts to slow the mind down. Because then the intelligence can point out how you're not enjoying, you're not getting anything out of this. And then the mind, no, but this, that. You know, it's like a spoiled child. You know, it's had its way all along. So then suddenly you catch it, and it'll throw a tantrum. But if you want to get control, then you don't freak out. You know, you have wild kids, the tantrum, they throw a tantrum, and everyone, okay. But it's not okay. It's just like you do this, you get in trouble. And they figure out real quick. Right? Spoiled kids don't ask spoiled around people who don't buy it. You know? Like that. I've seen kids, they'll be sitting there crying this, making a whole fuss like that. They look over their shoulder at you, because, you know, and then suddenly everything stops. It's like they're perfectly normal and all that. You know? Like that. And then something happens, it brings them back to, I've seen this so many times. Just this, they go, because they just know, you can't get away with anything here. So then they don't try. You know, they're not stupid. Right? They're just attached. And they've just seen, I throw a tantrum, I get everything I want. But if you throw a tantrum and you don't get anything out of it, then who's going to go to the endeavor? It's a lot of work to throw a tantrum. You know? You know, it's like, you know, a lot of energy. Yeah, you know, it's a lot of endeavors. So then you just figure out, okay, it's not worth the endeavor. So then you stop. That makes sense? Like that. So that's the way, that's what you'll find the mind will do when you first catch it. It'll just say, or why do this, or why be fanatic, or look at everybody else, they're not doing, or. But if that's what you want. Prabhupada said if one person goes back to Godhead, he'll consider all his endeavor worthwhile. So that's the point, is we should all have that determination, we'll at least be that one person. Not out of pride, but out of that we want to please. You know, we want to please the spiritual master. So we should be determined, we'll be that one. Even no one else does, what does it matter? You know, if everybody else doesn't chant their rounds, or everybody else doesn't do that, it's not, that doesn't work like that. No, we should be doing. Then it'll function. That makes sense? Yes.
So the one is in the life, they're made by the mind or by intelligence?
The mind. The intelligence points them out, but the mind has to accept them. You know, just like so many times, you must have had experience where very logically and clearly you explain something to somebody. It's very obvious that to do it in the way you're explaining will be the best for them, but they can't accept it because their mind is more fixed on other values. And the value isn't logic or what is right. You know, saying if the mind is accepted, what is right I'm going to do, then even they had another plan, if it's pointed out that that's not right, they'll change because they want to do what's right.
That also affects the mind, then also affected by ego then?
Yeah, because the ego is how you identify. So it all has to match, that's the thing. So if you change the identity, you change everything. You know, if you know the identity is, you know, I'm very special, outstanding person, then anything that will make you outstanding and special, that's what you're going to go for. So you look for, okay, well, everybody praises this devotee because of this. and that devotee because of that. So then you add it all up. Okay, I want to do those things because that's what makes me special. Even though it may not be one's duty. Because that's, and you tell them, no, this, that, why not? Why we, you know, this, that, why we can't do? But then the point is that what's it for? Why do? What is your purpose in doing? And then it goes down to it's just prestige. You know? Or someone, it's economics. The thing is economics. Then even though doing this would be devotionally better, it's not going to be economically better. So therefore they're going to say no. They're going to take whatever's. So that's the thing, is when you focus that bhakti is what we want, pleasing Krishna is what we want, pleasing Guru is what we want, then it works. It starts to work. Then you can use the intelligence to change the values of the mind. But you always have to have a reference point to run it back to. Right? So if you see somebody has good qualities, this, but in other areas doesn't, and this and that, and but they have a philosophy, it's not consistent because they don't have a point to root it back to. You know? It means they may say, I'm a devotee, so that's what keeps the commonality. But what kind of devotee? What is the method of their devotional service? I'm a devotee, but you know, we're normal. We're not fanatic. So what's normal? Okay. What's fanatic? Or what's normal? Take either one of them. Doesn't matter. You know? They may be more interested to talk on fanatic. You know, then okay, what's fanatic? You know, and then they'll give some nice thing. And what's normal? Oh, you know, one who just, and they, you know, that's where you'll catch them. Fanatic, they can use a definition, you know, just over and over this, over that. Okay, so what's normal? And then you'll find out just normal means whatever they grew up in as a karmi. That's all. That's normal. Anything above that's fanatic, everything below that's low class. So if they were a street person, anything above that is, you know, is fanatic. And if they were from upper class and anything below, then you'll see that. And because it's a sentiment, then as soon as you poke that one, then you'll see, you know, Mount Vesuvius. They'll go straight out of logic, immediately into emotion, and just start saying all kinds of things, this and that. So it's only if someone really wants to be introspective and know and all, then they can handle that. Otherwise you find many can't, because then you're attacking their identity. I'm a normal devotee, and normal means someone coming from this particular social background with these values and everything, because it's them. That's what they think is them. So as soon as you poke that, they'll take it, you're attacking me, because they identify with it, rather than, hey, no, we're just discussing, you know, we're just discussing philosophy, psychology, and that. No, you're attacking me. So that's the point, is as long as that's there, there's always going to be difficulty. But as soon as one sees, okay, let's look at that. Because what is that? What is the problem if you discuss me, if it's connected to the system here, the Vedic system? Okay, we're not this body, but the body falls into one of these you know, combination of eight categories here. You know, like that. You know, four ashrams and four varnas. It falls into that. That's where it's going to fall. So let us discuss. What is a Brahman, or what is a Kshatriya, what is a Vaishya, what's a Grihastha, what's a Brahmacharya? It doesn't matter, because it's something, in one sense, separate from you. It's third person. You can always discuss third person. But at the same time, it's your own nature. So it's a very ideal situation. You can discuss it threadbare, the finest point. It's not you. But at the same time, it's your conditioned nature, so you do it. Does that make some sense? Does it make sense? Or? So that's the whole point, is you're trying to create a devotional identity. I am servant of Krishna. That's why these basic things, devotees have heard them a million times. Yeah, yeah, I know that. But yeah, yeah, you can't live it. So yeah, yeah, you haven't realized it. So yeah, yeah, it's just theory to you. You know? So yeah, yeah, that's nice, 30 years, great, okay, but you know, where's the realization? You know, so that's the point, is that it's realization that makes the difference. You realize, it works. You don't realize, it doesn't work. It's that simple. What you realize is what you do. What you don't realize is not what you do. Or it's not what you do for any length of time.
That's a good point.
Yeah. You know, it's just, you know, you see, just like you have book distribution, okay. Everybody will say, rah, rah, book distribution. How many people are still doing it? But if you go to those people that are still doing it after 20, 30 years and no one's there recognizing, nobody's caring, you ask them, they'll be able to most nicely explain what is Sankirtan. Because it's a realization for them. You know, others is, yeah, yeah, we did that, you know, we were fired, we were fanatic in those days, you know, but now we know better, you know, it's like now we do stickers, you know, whatever. So, you know, it's like, you know, says you get something out of it. You know, the books, you don't get anything. No, wait a minute. What do you mean you don't get anything out of the books? So what do you get out of it? Get some money. Okay, well, you can do this, this, this. Okay, and what did you get out of that? Well, you know, yeah, it is service and that. So which is higher? So don't say you didn't. Just say that you can't do that anymore. You're more attached to your money than you are to your servant. That's done. Then you've hit freak out point. Critical mass has been attained, and then you get a nuclear fission, and then you get an emotional explosion. No? Because that's the reality. Because when it comes to thinking, very few like to think. Very few like to be introspective. Like that. So that's a difficulty. So if you can create that introspection, then that's the purpose. The Vedic culture means manisha. One is introspective. And because of that, one can go into the deepest detail in anything to do with their conditioned nature and look at it objectively. So that's an advantage. Yeah, because the point is themselves, there's a blueprint of that. So you study themselves compared to the blueprint. So you analyze the blueprint and then compare. So it's even then, it's not necessarily direct. It's only direct when it comes to, are you doing that? Or do you understand how to do that? And then, so if they don't have an ego that, yes, I'm so intelligent, then at least through that, okay, no, okay, so then this is how it works. So it always leaves, because if it's a third person, you can always get out. That's the political point, is that anything backed into a corner with no escape will fight worse than they would if they're in an open place. Right? Because then they have nothing. Their whole existence is at stake. But if an opening is left, that it's not you, it's that, you know, this is the nature, this is how it deals. You know? Like that. So then it leaves it open. Okay, then they can discuss that, because it's not actually them. You still leave that third person option. So then you can try that first with yourself, that, you know, how far you can take it, you know, because as long as it's someone else or some other things, yeah, we can look at it. And then slowly, slowly you can bring it down to oneself directly. You know, so that's, you know, and the farther one can go with oneself, then the better one gets out of it. Because the whole point is the more the senses are controlled, the more they're directed, the more you get. So even if one's materialistic, that's the better way to get it. You know? But still, that materialism at one point has to be dealt with. Because otherwise, you still won't be happy. And the real reason to take this up is to become actually happy. Right? And we can only be happy if our origin is happy. Right? The root is watered, the leaves will be happy. But we're thinking we're the root, so we're watering ourselves. But when you understand, no, we're the leaves, then we water the root, then we're automatically. So that's the main thing, is figuring out that we're not the root, but we're the leaves. You know? We catch that, then life becomes easy. And it's scientific to put water on the root. That makes sense.
Does the higher one pinpoint themselves? Is that the higher you're getting to realization?
Yeah, it means you can deal with it, and the farther in you can go without being distracted by the senses. Because when you actually analyze why, sometimes you may agree with the answers that the mind gives. Because you still value those things. But when you can analyze it, that it doesn't. What is getting? Just keep going further, 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 further. Then you'll find. You do come to the end, and the mind has nothing more to say, and what's there is nothing. And then it goes, oh. But as long as it has to have that desire that's what it wants to agree to. So then, even though it's touchy, it'll agree to work that way. And that's only because we identify. If we stop identifying with it, then we don't have to play any games with it at all. Make sense? Yeah. Yeah, sir.
So, I mean, as long as we have this false identity, then how further actually we can go with
self-analysis or something.
Yeah, to be introspective.
Means the point is you're putting it on. What is the conditioned nature? Means we're conditioned, but conditioned by the modes. The modes work in a particular way. Here are your options of how it's going to function. So now, first is you can look at it, okay, well, how does it function? First, of course, is that I'm servant of God. Right? And so then I have a conditioned nature. I have to engage that in God's service. How to do that? Okay, here is a system. Here's a social economic system that perfectly imbibes the spiritual. So now, where does my conditioned nature fit into that? And then analyze. And then you can keep analyzing what's going on there, separate from there. And if that's accepted, those will naturally start to follow. Once that's been accepted, then it makes it much easier what you can go into. Attachments will still follow. But then one can start to see is that detached work is better than attached work, because it gives both better results, both material and spiritual. Right? You please Krishna with detached work. And anything material you want, you get it through detachment. Right? Yes? No? Did I say in this group about the pigeon? Okay. Because one has to understand is energy goes away when it's approached and comes when things move away from it. Right? That's the way energy works. It means especially this particular group should understand this. Right? But in general it should work. Right? The ladies are all looking at the boys, right? And then when the boys come over, then what do? They go, hi, or they kind of like, you know, what's your problem? Right? And then they go, oh, okay. They walk away. Then I say, hey, where are you going? You know? So that's the principle. You see, female pigeon is there, right? Minding her own business. You know, then one of the male pigeon comes down, puffs himself up, makes all kinds of stupid noises and stuff. And, you know, somehow or another that's supposed to be impressive to a female pigeon. I'm not exactly sure why, but somehow or another that they all do it, right? And what does the female pigeon do? Hi. No, she just ignores him. She goes on pecking the ground. I mean, he's on the right side, they go to the left as if the guy doesn't even exist. Right? And then he comes over and does this thing again, and she moves a little farther away and does it again, then she'll fly off. Right? It means once she's sure that the guy is really following her, and that, then she'll fly off. Right? Because then that makes him really more into it. So she flies off, then he'll start doing his thing again. But then after a while, many times you see is then the guy figures, okay, not interested. He'll fly off. And as soon as he flies off and then minds his own business, that pigeon, that female pigeon will fly right up to him. Right? So that's the principle. When you move towards energy, it moves away. When you move away, it moves. So that's the point. Why does Krishna have all opulence? Because he is absolutely detached. Therefore, he has absolute opulence. And if you're attached, opulence goes away. So that's why opulence stays to attachment. That's why women attach themselves to detached men. Right? If the man's senses are controlled, women attach themselves to them. If they're into their senses, therefore approach women, then the women move away. You know, if there's something to be gained, okay. But otherwise, there's nothing to be gained, then why bother? So that principle is there. So that's how it works. Does that make some sense? So that's the whole principle. If the senses are controlled and they're detached, whatever there is of opulence will come. But at the same time is then, because you're detached, you don't need it or want it. So this is the illusion. I'm going to be attached and I'm going to get all the opulence and I'm going to enjoy it. Right? Or if I'm detached, I'm going to have nothing. But actually, is if you're detached, you have it, and as soon as you're attached, you don't have it. So then one would say, well, what's the use then? That's the point. Only Krishna can be detached and enjoy it, because he's God. We can't. We're energy. That's it. We're opulence. Right? So detached opulence can attract other opulence, but opulence can't enjoy opulence. Right? Krishna can enjoy opulence. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. So that's why if we want to be happy, we have to connect ourselves to him and please him. Then him is the supreme whole. He'll be happy, therefore we'll be happy. Because there's no other way for energy or opulence to be happy. Because opulence can't enjoy the opulence. Right? Does that make sense? That's the nature of the jiva. That's the nature of the of energy. So that means from Radharani on down, all the internal potency, all the jiva tattva, and that's the way they work. Even the material energy. Right? She attaches herself to the Lord of the material energy. That way she's happy. The jivas attach themselves to the Lord. The internal potency attaches themselves to the Lord. So when the jivas attach themselves to the internal potency that's serving the Lord, then that's how they actually become happy. Does that make some sense? Yeah. Is that okay? So if that principle is accepted, then one can approach the duties and everything. Okay, so then what are we supposed to do to please Krishna? And what do we do in this situation? When we eat, or when we sleep, or we take a bath, or we comb our hair, or we, you know, what is it? How do we please Krishna? Right. Then all these different things work. So that's what the Varnashram says. It tells you the body of laws how to do that. But it's written in such a way those who aren't actually interested in pleasing Krishna will at least still follow the laws because they'll see the material benefits. Because then they don't create an uncomfortable situation for the devotees. Right? So even though you have someone like Duryodhana who's not, you know, a nice person, the way he's behaving, then at least he doesn't create an environment in which the devotees can't function, right? Means you still have the normal interaction of people, the same dress, the same values, the same foodstuffs. You know, all the things that can be used in the Lord's service are still there. You still have the musical instruments and the music and the dance and everything that's that. Just some use it for themselves, but you could use it for Krishna. But as soon as one gives up that, then all that disappears. And then you don't have those things. Does that make sense? So that's why it's written in this way, so at least the demons will be pious. Because if they're pious, then possibly they could take up devotional service. Because pious people can surrender. Impious people don't. So if there's some piety to that degree, then they can take it up. So that's why it's recommended. Right? Unless they get the mercy of the spiritual master, then it doesn't matter. But the point is that that's nice, but if it's given to someone who has culture, then they can do even more, because they don't have to learn the culture, they already know it. So the time spent to learn it and practice it, they can already start applying. Does that make sense?
Gayatri. Gayatri, then. Suspension of study. There are no forbidden days for studying Vedic literatures, the Veda or Yajna. There are no forbidden days for the daily recitation, this is Brahma Sutra. Let an initiated Aryan do what is beneficial for his teacher until graduation. Because in the Karmakandas, there are certain days they can't study the Veda.
like that. But for the devotees, it's not restricted like that, because it's being done for a transcendental purpose. So there's no restriction. If you're doing it for mundane purpose, then so many restrictions are there. There may be like 20, 30 restrictions. You know, if a wind comes up, you know, a storm comes, or a frog jumps in between the teacher and the students, or certain omens come, or this or that, then it just stops, because materialist mind becomes distracted. You know, like if a frog goes through now, you just think, oh, stupid frog. But materialists, you know, the kids, they'll go, oh, hey, wow, hey, check out the frog. That's it, they're gone. So you can't teach them anymore. So there's all these rules to stop, to just stop the study. But for the devotees, then these things are not important, so it doesn't matter. Okay, protection of knowledge. According to sacred law, 10 persons are qualified for instruction in the Veda. Then let's ask, let a wise man, though knowledgeable, behave as a fool. Because if you instruct someone who's a fool, they'll never understand. So better not waste your time. If asked, then you know the person wants to know. But otherwise you tell somebody, hey, don't do this, then they'll only, you'll get in trouble. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur tells the story of a kid flying a kite on the roof. And while he's flying the kite, he's not looking. He's about to fall off the top of the roof, you know, walking backwards, because to make the kite go up, you walk backwards. So the man, you know, shouting, but the kid doesn't hear. So he runs up there and grabs the kid before he falls off the roof. Then the kid starts yelling, saying, hey, you're bothering my kite playing. And then the parents come up, what are you doing bothering our child? He's having fun. What are you, nasty man? And then all he was trying to do is save the kid's life. So that's the point. Don't say anything unless they want to know. You know, a general thing you can say, like you give a lecture, but don't go into specifically personally instructing somebody unless they want to know, because they don't want to know. They want to know, they'll ask. They don't want to know, they won't ask. Sacred knowledge must not be sown on barren soil. A teacher should rather die with his knowledge than sow it in barren soil. Sacred learning approached a Brahman and said, I am thy treasure. Deliver me only to a Brahman whom thou shalt know to be pure. Because other than that, then there's no benefit. The knowledge sown, if it's barren, won't grow. Right? So that's why a bona fide teacher, then if you have fertile soil but you put in a bad seed, it won't grow either. So when you have proper teacher, proper student, then things work. That's the principle. Then topic 4, the respectful behavior towards gurus, respective superiors. A student shall reverently salute his teacher. A simple Brahmin who controls himself is better than a pundit who is not. Because culture or character is the goal of knowledge. Right? If you have knowledge, you're supposed to act in a proper, appropriate way. So if you have knowledge but don't act that way, then there's no real meaning to the knowledge. So that's why both must be there. The ornament of knowledge is humility. If that's there, then you know the person actually is knowledgeable. Otherwise, they're just academic. Like that. One must rise to meet a superior and afterwards salute him. The vital airs mount upwards to leave the body when an elder approaches. Means when an elder approaches, the subtle body stands up. So now, that means your life airs move with it. So then if you want to keep those, you have to stand up. And if you don't, then they're gone. You lose energy. Like that. Yes.
I was wondering about this point, because our practice is that when a senior comes in, we just hit the floor.
Oh, it is standing up means you're offering respects, but technically you should stand up, then offer obeisances.
Because I see that, like in Gaudiya Math, that's what they do. And
they stand up.
First
to stand up, then offer bases. Otherwise, you know, they're sitting with the crossed leg and they kind of roll forward, bounce the head off the floor and roll back. You know, it just was, okay, maybe some endeavor was there. Definitely one has to give credit for that. But the real thing is first you respect them by standing, you've acknowledged them, then you offer obeisances, because it's two different things. Yeah, that's the point. You stand first, then you... Yes?
How is it that the subtle body stands up? The subtle body is also conditioned.
But that's just the way it's made. The life airs move up. When your superior comes, the modes of nature take your life airs up out of your body.
Yeah,
If you stand up, you catch them. You don't stand up, then they go. It means whatever is practical for your position. I don't think that you have, you know, a certain timing there, you know.
Oh, wait, I'm going to catch it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a matter of, you know, when you see what's the practical thing, and you stand up. The point is that you make that endeavor. It's not that they're rushing off, but it just means they go up, you know. I'm sure that they'll wait a few seconds for you to get up. But that's the karmakanda aspect. You know, we only put some of these things in here so that the metaphysics of it is understood. Otherwise, devotees, the shastras always mention many levels. Why should you do it? It pleases Krishna. No, but we want to know why you should do it. You know, because the life airs move like that. Okay, so then some catch it there. But some will say, no, but what's the real... Because if you don't do it, then you're going to lose. And then some people, then you have to go down to, if you don't do it, you'll go to hell. Right? Or if you do it, you'll gain. If you don't, you'll lose. Like that. So that's all the different things, the levels that you'll see the shastras talk on. You know. So that's the different principles. So the point is that respect for authority, then it's shown in that way. You know, by standing in that. Because otherwise, if you're in a relaxed position, that's not. It's just like you can put, you know, someone there, and then someone you really respect walks in. You're not going to just keep relaxing. You're going to move at least a little bit. You know, it'll go from informal to formal. So the proper manifestation of formal is then standing up. So sometimes we leave in the metaphysic aspect of it. Like that. We generally drop out the, you know, what benefits you'll get as far as, you know, going to heavenly planets or which hells you go to if you don't do it. Yes?
Is everything like that age, or does it mean that you're explaining that respect should just respect according to age, vaishyas according to more people, and that?
All of them. Yeah, I'm just trying to see if it has the... Where's that section? Oh yeah, okay, that's it. Yeah, that's the one right there. Means wealth, kindred, age, the due performance of rites, and sacred learning. Those are the four. I mean, those are five. One, two, three, four, five. So that's the order that they go in. It means wealth is the lowest, then relationship, then age, then the performance of rites, and then sacred learning. Then naturally for devotees, then there's a one above that. It's the devotion, or that surrender to the Lord. So those things. So anyone who has any... The person who has the most of those, you know, in proportion, then they're the most more respectable of a group of persons. Because sometimes you may meet a group. So who has the most, and that's not that, okay, you know, there's, so anyone who has the most of those, and we take that in the order that's here. You know, so if someone has one sacred learning and someone else has wealth, kindred, and age, then that's there, but sacred learning's higher than all of those. But if you have two people with sacred learning, and one of them is sacred learning and age, or sacred learning and kindred, or sacred learning and wealth, then they would be more than the other one with that. Unless it's a matter of this one's sacred learning is so much more than that one's sacred, and then you'll see that. So means that's why intelligence has to be used to discriminate. Right? You discriminate with, you have to balance that. So this is how you keep your... Means one wants to get into social things and who's who and everybody and who's higher and lower. Why let your mind just decide? These are the actual methods. So then the natural nature of the living entity to try to classify someone socially, then here's the method. But then those who are superior are respected. Those who are the same are you're friendly with, and those who are junior, then you're kind towards. Right? So then it works. So then there's no problem in creating that social distinction. Right? But if we use our own, let our own mind do it, and not use some standards, we have our own values. Or upon finding out we're jealous of those superior, then we're very chivalrous to those who are equal, and we exploit those who are junior, then there's no benefit. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. No, it's standard. I mean, the women must be respected. That's coming up. It's coming up in 7.5, though in this printout you don't get the details of it. Like that. In this printout you don't get the details. So then that's there, especially grihasthas, because then within that realm, if they're means the brahmacharis and that, but if they're outside the upper level, outside the grihastha ashram, it's not as important because they're not functioning in that level. You know, so the grihastha men, they have something to gain from women. There's a deal there. So then that's there. Those who are out, then it's not necessarily. But in certain occasions, still that will be there. You know, even if you're dealing in the, you know, it's like, let's say you're doing something and you're making an arrangement, you're going in a group, so then you have to make sure that the women are taken care of. Like that. That has to be there. So it's a natural thing that they'll respect and this and that, but at the same time is, that doesn't mean then it means there's certain areas where they're respectful and all that, but it doesn't mean that the women lead. That's the balance. Everything is balanced. So generally what happens in the Western culture is either all one way or all the other way. The men respect and the women take over. You know? And to get the women not to take over, they don't respect. So you get this problem. You know, if the temple president is nice to all the women in the temple and, you know, sees their facility, then the natural thing is then they'll want to run the place. They figure that they have a right to speak on everything. No, you have a right to be taken care of. They run the temple. You know, you can speak something, you can say something, but they make the decision. So that's the problem, is unless there's that intelligence to discern those things, where the line is between one duty and the next. Because if you make it too hard line, then it creates these groups too clearly. So in the normal varnashram, that's created. The lines are very seriously drawn. But in the Vaishnava tradition, it's not. It's more cloudy. Because it's all being done to serve Krishna. And because then you can move in and out of normal duties and emergency duties. And in emergency duties, one can do anything. Like that. So these lines are very fine. So it takes some refined intelligence to see these things. So that's the thing, is that the men should be respecting and taking care of the women, but at the same time is they're not to be controlled by them. You know, I mean, of course, affections and this and that, there's always a natural control there. They may become domesticated, but they can't lose control, otherwise then the women lose respect. The point is the dealings must be that the men's respect for the women shouldn't lessen the women's respect for them. Does that make sense? Because if that does, then the whole thing falls apart. Because then the women will be dissatisfied. When they're dissatisfied, it creates a mess. You know, men are dissatisfied, they keep it to themselves. Women are dissatisfied, they share it. Right? It's a natural thing. Women share everything, good, bad, otherwise. It's shared. You know, men generally, if it's bad, they keep it to themselves. It comes too much, then they may create something. But then it's more of a, you know, how you say, it's a philosophy, or it's a, you know, it's some ideal or something like that. You know, free the country, or, you know, these kind of things. Women, what does it matter? As long as that things work, who do they care?
do it.
Yeah, like that. It means the point is they would do, but if it's not, because that's their duty. But if not, then the Bhagavatam has to be spoken, and if there's a woman who's qualified, then she'll give. Right? You know, it means if there's a qualified man, he'll speak. But if there's not, then better a qualified woman than an unqualified man. But it shouldn't be just a woman speaks just because she's a woman. You know, it's not qualified or unqualified. That's not the point. What are you gonna say? Oh. Yeah. So they had to find women to fulfill that. Just to, you know, it's like a quota system. You know, you have it in India. You know, 30% is reserved for, you know, women, and so much percent for tribals and this and that. So therefore you have such a wild government. It should be 100% is reserved for those who are qualified. Doesn't matter if they're men, women, or this. Doesn't matter that. If they're qualified. Just like Vidura, he's a Shudra. But he's qualified, so therefore he's the prime minister. But he's not the prime minister because Dhritarashtra is running a very liberal government that wants to see that all sections of society are represented in his court. No, he's qualified. He sits in the court. Like that. You see, Dhritarashtra only takes advice from a few people. You know, Bhishma as the, you know, most qualified Kshatriya there. Drona and Kripa as his you know, the palace gurus. And Vidura. And many times you see, and who does he take advice from first? It's always Vidura. Then those other three. After first he speaks to Vidura, then he'll call the other three. Right? And even sometimes he takes advice from Sanjay, who is also Shudra. Like that. Because he's his personal attendant. So that intimacy is there. So he, soon Sanjay tells him all kinds of things. You know, the reason you're having all this problem is because you never listen to all these other people. And he's not saying you listen to me. He's saying your problem because you don't listen to them. So he follows the etiquette, but still, that's the thing, is if it's understood the position, then so much can be said, so much can be this and that. It means Bhishma, Drona, all them will say everything, but still then it's up to Dhritarashtra because he's the king. He makes the decision. Whatever he makes, then they go with it. Or if they don't like it, then they can leave the kingdom. But they can't sit there in the kingdom not liking it, you know, and live off the kingdom. But, you know, they're following, he's made the decision. Then they go with what he follows, says. So that's the principle. You know, it's like Vidura, because he's being taken care of, he's there. He doesn't like what's going on. So as soon as Duryodhana says, we don't need you anymore, you know, and Dhritarashtra says, yeah, we don't need you anymore, you're released from your duties, that moment he's out the door. You know, says, okay. You know, because I don't like the scene, he's gone. But because he's living by their graces, therefore then he's obliged. Like that.
I was talking about respect, like people reading about wealth and age, the family age and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this is right because my grandmother, I'm just telling her, she told me that whatever the situation is, that even if your father is there or your teacher is there, you have to first attend to your husband because he is the.
Yeah, for the women, that would be how they would deal. Because you know the others through them. Right? Because the point is the father has given the girl to the husband. So his claim over her is over. She's the father. He's the father. But his claim of controlling her life ends when he pours the water. That's the law. The husband is the Lord, not the father. Before marriage, it's the father, but after, it's the husband. So therefore, then the connection even there. And then the teacher is still also through. So that principle always remains.
Teacher means also spiritual master?
There, the same time as the point is like this, is one always has to remember, it is a spiritual thing, there is a connection there directly, But the point is being conditioned, you have bought into an institution called marriage that's based on certain principles of interaction. Right? Somebody marries you because they figure that there's going to be a certain stableness in performance of certain particular duties that you all have to work out before marriage. Right? That's why Gandharva marriage isn't recommended, because Gandharva marriage means there's this mutual consent, but you haven't worked out how you're going to live your life. Right? It means you can read the whole from beginning to end, Romeo and Juliet, and they never talk about how they're going to live their life. You know, any romantic, they never talk that. You know, it's something about the sunrise and this and that. And, you know, it's always like that. Never talk about what they're going to do, how they're going to live, what is the standards. Never. That's the weakness of Gandharva marriage. So if authority is involved, then they see nature's match, this, that. You check the charts. So the Prophet recommends charts, because how do you know? Romance means everything's fine, perfect, wonderful, fabulous. But the reality is something else. Just like this. Okay, the girl, when she goes with the boy, is she at her best or not? Best. Does any of her friends ever see her that nice? No. Does her parents see her that nice? Is she even that nice when she's with herself? Right? Never. Okay, so now, why is she doing this? Right, to impress the boy. Now, after marriage, is she going to continue that? No. So, now the problem comes is the boy thinks that's what he's marrying. Right? So then, and the boy is doing exactly the same thing. So the girl's thinking of marrying such a nice boy, the boy is thinking he's marrying such a nice girl. But they're both cheating. So that's why Gandharva is not recommended. Because it's actually even forbidden in Kali Yuga. Like that. But that's the weakness of it, because basically all it comes down to is sensual attraction. Right? That's the purpose of Gandharva marriage, is sex. So that's why, and you can't maintain a marriage by sex. Right? Like even pigeons break up. You know? Like that. You know? So, you know, and you can't, I don't think you could do better than that. I think Prabhupada said, I think he said 70 times or 60 times a day. You know, so, and they even break up. So it won't work. Mathematically, it can't happen. You know what I'm saying? It can't function. It can't work as a religious institution. Because it doesn't address the real meaning of the marriage. So the whole point comes back to is there's duties and all that you said you're going to do. And there's a certain relationship in that you deal that can't be broken by it. So even though one takes care of the spiritual master and interfaces, one can't do it at the expense that the husband will feel left out. So there has to be something worked out beforehand. Generally what will happen is one will just sit there day to day like that. Then the spiritual master comes. Then wife's out of the house. Nothing's been discussed. And hey, what's going on? You know, he didn't eat. This didn't happen. Where's this? Where's that? You know, and it always somehow or another coincides when he has something serious coming up, because he's not knowing that that's going to happen. And so it's a whole big scene there. But has it been discussed before? You know what I'm saying? When the spiritual master's not there and it's a nice time, it's easy to discuss, is it being discussed? What is going to happen when the spiritual master comes? What is expected to minimum carry on? What can be, you know, let go for, you know, that temporary amount of time? Does that make sense? Or if that's very much part of what you do, that is a major part of your service, is serving the spiritual master more involved, is that known before the marriage? That this is what's going to go on. If they like it, they buy into it. If they don't, they don't. You know what I'm saying? So it has to be very, very clear, because the point is bottom line is that's what functions. Right? It means like if two women speak, is there much illusion going on between them? Or is it pretty direct? Yeah. Okay. So then why will it work any difference between women and men? Understand? Why should it function any better if it's not? You know what I'm saying? When you talk to another woman, it's very down to earth. So why it shouldn't be down to earth when you're talking to the men? Right? For fear of loss. Right? So what's the difference? Okay, you talk to the women, what's the thing that you're worried about there? There's loss. Why? Because they don't behave nicely with each other. Right? But if you behave nicely with another woman, is there a nice relationship? Can it last? Yes. But what's the difference between relationship with a woman that lasts and one that doesn't last? Right? Because both of them you're being very open. So it's whether you're being nice or whether you're not. Right? Whether you're making that endeavor to be pleasant or whether you're not. Right? So in other words, when you're being lazy in your interactions on, you know, behaving nicely, it doesn't even work with women. So why will it work with men? Right? Men are attracted to women because of the theory that they're very pleasant, nice people. Right? And the point is women will deal with other women who are pleasant and nice. And if they're not, they're not going to deal with them. Does that make sense? So that's there. Now the point is then it's not the openness that's the problem. Men can handle straightforwardness because men are straightforward amongst themselves also. Right? So that's not the problem. It's the pleasantness in being straightforward. So generally what happens is the women become straightforward with the men when they're very frustrated, and so then they show the side that the women don't want to see either. And then they can't understand what's going on. So therefore that openness has to be there. There has to be communication. There's no communication. How are you going to create community between these two people? Right? Because there should be common values, common everything. If it's not common, then how they'll live together? You know what I'm saying? Because it's little things that make it work or not work. It's not big things. It's little things. You know, certain ways of dealing, certain considerations, certain, mannerisms, certain, the way you deal with your facilities in the house. You know what I'm saying? Some women love picking up after the men because it gives them a sense of something to do and they know they're a bunch of idiots anyway. You know? But some of them, it drives them nuts. Why can't they pick up their own socks? Why do they have to leave their underwear all over? Why do they have to do this and that? Why can't they, So therefore, then they have to be matched. Right? Some women, if they did everything themselves, they would feel there's nothing for them to do. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. You have to match them. So that's done by communication, by observation. Right. The guy shows up and he's a slob. So that's the way he is. So if you don't mind making him less of a slob, or you don't mind him being a slob, great. But if it's annoying and he doesn't change, then okay, even though he's very nice and he's got plenty of money, it doesn't mean that it's going to work. Because at some point his slobbishness will be more of an annoyance than the positiveness of facilities you may get out of it. Right? So therefore, that, just down-home reality and communication is very important. If that's not there, how can it work? Does that make sense? So this means these things should be discussed. You'll work it out yourself. Everybody has their own detail. The principle is you've agreed to this marriage. So therefore, that means the other person is involved. And if you're not maintaining that, then does that make sense? Because that's what you buy into. Does that make sense? It means if you know the nature of men and women, right? Then you'll know that this has to be dealt with. right? And it has to be dealt with pleasantly. They're looking for pleasant service and emotional support. That's it. You know, and then depending upon who it is, then that means something more this way or that way. How pleasant, or how much service, or how much emotional support. And that's it. Right? They're not looking for them to get them a house, get them money, get them facilities, get them this, get them, no. That they can get themselves, that they don't care about. Facilities for men, that's their thing. For them, that's just their field. So it's no big deal. But things don't reciprocate. Women do. But women, their field is the emotions, the interactions, the relationships. But relationships, how do you develop them if there's no facility? How do you have a big family under a tree? Right? You need a house. You know, the house needs things. So that's the point. Then there's something in common. There's a common ground in which men and women have something to offer to each other. So if that's understood, then that will be dealt with. So in a pleasant way, nice way, like this and that, you'll see that it goes on and they're taken care of. And if they're really happy, yes, you go and you take care and that's great, and they're willing to do something else and go, you know, eat at the restaurant or whatever it is, it doesn't matter. Nice. But if no, they're bent out of shape by that, then you have to make your decision. Because the point is okay, you can go mess up the marriage as long as you'll never get married again. If you're just going to go out and after this guy walks off, because you're always with your spiritual master, then you go marry another one, it's just the same thing over and over again. That's just cheating. That means you only want the men when you want them. And when you want to do your thing, then you do your thing and you expect them to go on hold. And why is that any better than the men doing the same thing? When they want women around, then it's nice. And when they don't, then they're supposed to be, you know, happy in the closet, you know. You know, that starch hung up, you know, and put in a few mothballs and all that, you know. Then whenever you like, you get them out, you know, air them out a bit, you know, get rid of the mothball smell, and then, you know, heart. You know what I'm saying? It's the same thing. It goes both ways. Does that make some sense? So that's the whole point. Just know what the natures are that you're dealing with. Then you know what to do and what not to do. Because you can't get around it. A woman's going to act as a woman. A man's going to act as a man. But within that, you have a wide sphere. But there's certain principles that are always there. You know? Certain principles are always there. No? Does that make sense? Yeah. So then you have to see those, what it's based on, and what it starts at the beginning. That's what you have to do. So don't do anything in the beginning, before marriage, you're not willing to do the rest of your life. You know, like you see here, I see it all the time. And you must also, you know, see it. Before marriage, wow, it's so nice, dressed, nice, that chick, fine, pretty good, that. And as soon as they're married, you know, walking out just like Methuselah, you know. It's just, you know, it's just like that. One Indian lady, high-class Indian lady, mentioned the Purushottam Maharaj. She says, you know what the problem with your movement is? He says, your unmarried girls dress as married girls, and your married women dress as unmarried. Wow. He said, if you could straighten this out, your society, as a society, as a social system, would start to work. This is an elder, you know, high class lady. She said, like that, and I see it myself. Before the marriage, always so nice, and after, they don't care. Everything hanging out, walking around, like this, you know, it's like that. So that's the point, is because the guy, you know, then the guy's wondering what's going on. And then the wife, no, we're not this body and all this, and we don't care for all this. But then suddenly you sure seem to be the body before, you know, like that. So that's the principle. You have to balance that. Means the whole thing is you be yourself and you find a man who will accept you as you are. At the same time, as a man should be as himself, and you should accept him as he are. You're not going to change him. You know, oh, we'll work on that afterwards. It may not work. So that's the reality. That's, if you deal like that, then it'll always work. You know, if it's working, great. If you find it's not working, check those points out. Are you still acting the way it was before? that same sensitivity, that same, right? That's why it appears Gandharva is so nice, because it's absolute sensitivity, right? Every movement, each one is sensitive to what the other one's doing. What does it mean? Right? Sometimes a little oversensitive, but whatever it is, it's sensitive to that. But then marriage means you just turn, okay, now you got him, so you don't have to be care anymore. And then the guy can't figure it out. They're stupid. Right? They can't figure out what happened. Like that. And even if they haven't figured out then, they have some doubts. And then when the woman gets pregnant, then he has more doubts. And then when she gives birth to the first kid, then, you know, then he really doesn't know what's going on, because she doesn't pay any attention to him. So he can't figure out what's going on at all. So it should be very, very clear and presented properly. Does that make sense? So the bottom line comes down to communication. It's who you are, what you, how you're dealing, what you're expecting. That's communicated, and they buy it, then you have a partner for life. If that's not, then there's going to be some surprise at some point that one part or the other is going to be freaked out about. They don't accept you for who you think, who you actually are, because you presented yourself as something else. Right? Or you can't accept them because you didn't look at it either, and then you find out there's somebody different than what you were expecting. Does that make sense? But the reality is, if you want to make it work, then you just have to adjust and figure out what it is you're looking at. It's never too late to figure that out. You know, discuss, what is it? What is actually going on? What is this institution for? You know, what? And you have to think yourself, why am I in this for? Why am I married? For what reason? You know? What is it you're getting at? Why? Why would you do it, right? Woman never does anything without a purpose. So why is she doing it? What will she gain? Right? And one has to see that it includes that interaction with the masculine needs. Right? If it's simply just, okay, I'll have some stable facility, or, you know, then, you know, the brahmacharis will stop harassing me, or then the other women will stop bothering me. That's not enough, because that was only your side. It didn't include that you're buying into another person's life and they have needs. Right? So it has to include that. At least 50-50, right? At least 50%. Right? That's considered good. Does that make sense? Okay, so try it. Should work. Like that. Okay, so then. Okay, manner of salutation. That means that you basically, you know, you let others know who you are. In other words, the junior always says who they are first. They don't ask the senior who they are. They first introduce themselves. Then they leave it to the senior to introduce themselves. Then respect towards female relatives, senior, female, basically they're treated like mother, like that. Though the mother is always special. She is more respectable than them. Other, but still, they're all like mother. So that even includes, you know, older sisters, you know, aunts, all the aunts, you know, especially or the grand aunts, like this, like that. Sister-in-laws, if they're married to the brother of any brother or brother-in-law that's older, then they're always senior. So all that. They're all like mother. They're all respected, but still the mother is still the most respected. Because that's your connection to the whole thing. Like that. So your own mother can't be disrespected in respecting others. Like that. Then, according to age, then it says, between a young Brahmin and an elder Kshatriya, the Brahmin is the father. And here the age that they gave was a Brahmin of 10 years, and a year old, and a Kshatriya of 90 years old. The Brahmin is the father. Because he has sacred knowledge. So that's greater than the Kshatriya, who may be older, he may be wealthier, and he's performed, you know, so many rites, but still, because of sacred learning, the Brahmin is more. Does that make sense? Of course, one may ask what the Kshatriya has, but the point is, this is not his field. So one who studies and teaches, it's always a better position than one who simply administrates. You know, this is material consideration, but you see, that's the way it is. You know, but it's natural. Does that make sense? Okay. Then making way for others means according to these things you'll make way. But in this, then women are also included. So if you have a pregnant woman, then everybody makes way for her, except the elevated Brahmin or a king. Everybody else makes way for her. Or everybody else will make way for a Shudra who's 90 years plus, except the Brahmin or the king. This also includes someone who's carrying a burden. Like somebody's carrying something, you always, an intelligent man, even if he's a Brahmin, can move out of the way for them. Unless it's a formal situation. The king's going down the road, then everybody moves out of the way. But if there's a Brahmin coming the other way, if he's very learned, he's not just ordinary, then he doesn't have to move. The king has to move. Though generally, because they know the king's ego, they'll always move. But I think Astavakra. Yeah, I think something happened and the king, I think it was that one where he, the king had a priest. I think it happened in two different occasions. No, I think it was the All War. I don't remember who it was, but he was, Ramanuja's guru means who is they're back one or two back from Ramanuja. Oh no. It's not Kulashekar. There's one of the devotees, he's also, we quote him, that he became a king. The one that says, whenever I think of sex life I spit. Yamanuja-chara, yeah. So Yamanuja-chara, he was a big Brahmin. And then, what came up? Yeah, they had that's a different story. It's Astavakra's one I'm thinking of. Astavakra, then this king was having, he had a priest who, anybody he'd defeat, they would drown him in the ocean. And so then they did that to Astavakra's father. So then Astavakra, because we have to remember Astavakra was correcting his father on some technical point in the Shastra while he was in the womb. And he got so angry that he cursed him, he'll be bent in eight places. So he was bent with eight curves in his body. So when he'd walk a little funny. That's why he's called Astavakra. Then they went into the city, and the king was coming down the road, and they were going the other way, and they wouldn't move. They just stopped the whole procession, you know, because they're little kids. I think they were 8 years old or something. So then some people came because they're Brahmins, so they came and said, the king's coming, please move out of the way. And they said, no, come on, the road belongs to the Brahmins. He says he wants to use our road, he should ask our permission. You know, it's kind of like, you know, don't be silly, this, that, you know, like that. It says, no, this is what the Shastra says, according to Shastra. It says, okay, well, and then they went back and this and that, and then some others came and all this. And finally the king, you know, himself had to come. And then basically they said, you know, what can we do? How can we serve you? He says, I want to argue with your priest, because they wouldn't let a kid argue, because if he loses, then he'll be drowned in the ocean. So they're not going to let a kid argue. But his point is we're arguing. Like that. You want to walk down this road, you let us argue. Otherwise, you can go. It means there's plenty of other roads you can walk down. You know, of course, they're on the main road, the king, the royal road. He's not going to go down an alley or something. So then the king agreed. They could see these kids aren't ordinary. So then he went in, and he defeated that other priest. So then it was ruled that then he should be drowned. So then when they went down to the ocean to throw him in, then at that time, then he revealed that actually he's a servant of I think, Varuna. And that he just came this form, and all those Brahmins that are drowned weren't drowned. They were just thrown in the ocean, and then Varuna's men came and received them very nicely and took them, and he was doing a big 12-year yajna. So just at that time, he had finished the yajna. So then, his, you know, Astavakra's father and all these other Brahmins then came out of the water. But the point was is that when it comes down between the king and a qualified Brahmin, the king moves. So up to that point, basically everyone will move for a man with a burden, for an elder man, even a Shudra, or a woman, like that. But when it gets up to that level, then the women will move. Does that make some sense? So you have this dual thing. So everyone has their respect, but there's some point at which then it switches. You know, the Brahmins are independent. No one tells them what to do, but they have to follow the scriptures. You know what I'm saying? So everybody has their independence and has their control. Like that. But this idea of modernism is, you know, then absolute power corrupts absolutely. Because you don't never have absolute power. Right? Yudhishthira is emperor of the world, but still, he has to listen to the Brahmins. You know? And the Brahmins, they don't deal with it. They don't manage it. So there's always a balance like that. So does that make sense? So therefore, in the house, then there's always a balance. Right? In any relationship, there always has to be the balance. Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea. Dharma Shastra is showing you what is that balance, what is the middle. Okay, so then that basically finishes up to the position of Acharya. Okay, so any more questions on that? Or? Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.